For this week's episode of Get Real, I am bringing back one of my favorite episodes ever, Stevie Frazier. She's so funny. Makes me pee my pants laughing. She has worked every job in this music industry, country music industry, from being an intern to her desk was outside of her boss's office because there was no space for her to have a desk, but she like created a spot for herself because she's such a hustler. I'm telling you, like, then she talks about meeting Beyonce and Jay-Z and how she kept really trying to create a conversation with Beyonce like four times. And it's so funny. Stevie has these stories in her life that are wild that you wouldn't believe could really happen until you hear them out of her own mouth because they're just so funny. And she's such an inspiration. She's a cancer survivor and she's a boss. She has a publishing company with her husband, Jesse, who also is a DJ and goes on tour with Thomas Rhett. They are awesome. So cool. This interview is amazing. Check it out. Stevie Frazier, my girl.
Hey, everyone. I'm here with someone who's so fabulous, Stevie Frazier.
Hello.
What's up?
Everything's up. Everything's up and everything's down.
I'm like, ain't that the truth?
Super busy, super bored. No, I'm not bored. I would love to be bored for like 5 minutes.
I know. Well, I don't. I know you said you're not bored, but like that's how I am sometimes. I feel like I am so unbelievably busy.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden I'll just like have nothing. But there's always this running list in my head. Always. Is there always a running list for you?
There's. So I have this app called Wunderlist.
Okay.
And in the middle of the night, or it's crazy. I could get to bed, to the actual bed, by like 9:30, 10 o'clock. And then I'm still awake. I'm like, I have a puzzle app. I'm like trying to calm my mind. I'm taking melatonin gummies.
Oh, good.
And I'm just like, okay, I'm going to chill out. I have this little meditation
thing. I was going to say, do you listen to meditation?
I do. I have these UCLA meditations that Rita Wilson sent me. And she was just like,
oh, like Tom Hanks' wife, Rita Wilson?
Yes.
Oh, just slide that one in. Oh, she, yeah, you well, know. Are you going buds?
When I got cleared of breast cancer last year and Jesse was at the BMI Awards, he was winning Writer of the Year.
Yeah, okay, so you have to talk about that because you had cancer and your husband won Songwriter of the Year.
Yes.
In the same year. Like, you've had just a wild journey.
It's so crazy because we were saying this the other day.
It's fine. Someone's ringing the doorbell and I'm just going to ignore it. It's probably a package because I have 87. Sugar! And Sunny's trying to sleep. This is how real it is. Sunny's trying to sleep. Michael's not home yet, so praying she didn't cry. We get packages dropped off all the time. I need to write a note. Please don't ring the doorbell.
Yeah.
But I don't. And then Sugar barks. But luckily, Sunny sleeps through it all.
We don't have a doorbell. So any commercial that has like doorbell rings or whatever, Gus has no clue. And so I'm like, oh, this is awesome. We've never had a doorbell. But if my phone dings, he thinks it's the dog sitter coming to get him. Oh. And he loses his mind.
See,
he's like, she's here. I'm
oh
like, nobody.
No, she loves the dog sitter.
Oh, so much more than me.
Does it She's hurt like, your feelings?
No. Well, at first I was like, he loves you more than me. She's like, no. She's like, it's like we have joint custody and okay. You pay me child support and I'm the fun parent. Like, she's like, he comes over and gets to play and you have to like enforce the rules. I'm like, yeah.
So you kind of
so
get
true.
The shit end of the stick though.
Yeah. I'm the mom.
She's making the money, having all the fun, and you're having to be the disciplinarian that pays.
She gets to be like fun dad. You know, like dads are always like, oh, what am I going to do with the kids when I get them? I'll take them to Chuck E. Cheese. And the mom's like, do your homework. Eat
She's
your
the
vegetables.
Fun dad.
Yeah.
Screw her.
I know.
I'm just kidding. We love her.
I love her. It's so funny when we're gone, she's sending us pictures. And I'm like, thank God I don't have to worry about this crazy dog.
Because he has a ton of energy, doesn't he?
So much.
Yeah. Is he like a dog that needs to be exercised?
24/7.
What kind of dog is he?
He's a Weimaraner.
Oh, they like to run, huh?
He likes to run. He likes to jump. He likes to. But then it's also crazy, he could have his brain going a mile a minute, and then I'll say, do you want to sit in my lap? And I'll get in the couch in the corner, and he curls up in like a little roly-poly position.
So he's like the best of both worlds.
Yeah, except sometimes I'm just like having to work, and he's like, look at me, pulling blankets off the couch.
Like going a little kid.
Yeah.
Mom, watch me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, give me all your attention.
Back to Rita Wilson and melatonin.
So we were... Rains, it pours, everything is good, everything is bad. We were trying to do IVF, and I was doing it at a clinic that was just starting up at a pretty reputable place, and I was just, like, so excited. I'm like, okay, we're going to collect some eggs. We're going to, you know, I have the BRCA gene. So
what's that?
It's the BRCA gene. My mom has it. Probably my aunt. I'm not sure. But it's just a gene that puts you at a higher risk for breast, ovarian, skin cancer, all these kind of crazy things. And my mom got diagnosed with breast cancer 5 years ago, I think now. And so then we all got tested, me and my two sisters. And me and my middle sister, I'm the oldest of three. My middle sister had it, and I had it. Thankfully, my little sister, littlest sister didn't. But
so y'all both had breast cancer.
We did, yeah.
And you had no idea. You only got tested because your mom had this gene.
Yes. And so
wow.
For the past 5 years, well, not in the last year and a half, but I was going to get tested, doing mammograms, and every 6 months I would do a breast MRI, mammogram, MRI, mammogram. And at first, Jesse was like, I don't want you to get tested. He's like, I just think it's going to stress you out. It's going to freak you out. And I was like, dude, I want to be ahead of this because it's coming. Like, there's no, my aunt had breast cancer four times. My mom, or three times, three or four, I can't remember. But my mom had it. Then my mom got skin cancer. So I was just like, I want to be ready.
Amen.
Yeah. And he
instead
was like,
instead of living in denial that yes. It couldn't happen.
And my sister, she got tested, knew she had the gene, but found a lump and ignored it. So she kind of...
Wait, your sister?
Mm-hmm. And came into it like stage... It's really weird. It's like stage 1, 2, 3, 4, but then there's like levels in each stage. So she came into it pretty close to a stage 3 and had to deal with a lot of chemo, a lot of medicine. And it's also really crazy that we all have a different kind of breast cancer. So like when people are just like, why haven't we found a cure for breast cancer or whatever, or any cancers or whatever, it's like there's so many.
Oh, wow. So it's not just like you get it's breast like cancer breast and it's cancer. Like vanilla ice cream. Here's yes. The cure. It's yeah. Like it's there's like all different
natural
varieties.
Natural vanilla, vanilla bean, French vanilla. You know what
really?
I mean? Yeah. So she has a hormone-led one. I don't. So she has to take medicine forever.
Okay.
What is yours? I can't take any medicine. My mom had a triple negative. My sister had a HER2.
What's a triple negative?
It's just an aggressive, fast, it's like a fast growing, but my mom found it very early because my aunt had it. My aunt and my sister have the same kind. It's just crazy.
Wait, you can't take medicine? Why is that?
No. So I can't take any hormones because mine is hormone fed. My sister has to take a hormone. Yeah. So like
when... It's like a diabetic can't have sugar.
Yeah. It's crazy, which... It was nuts, and Jesse was just like, I don't want to stress you out, because I'm a worrier. I mean, I like will have a puppy and be like, one day he's gonna be old, and he's like, oh my god,
like, I know, what is that?
Love
I feel
the
like
now.
I do that too. I have so much trouble loving the now.
Me, I'm like anxiety 24/7.
I am trying to love the now. Like that is my goal, hardcore, because I am so tired of having anxiety.
Yeah,
are you?
Too. Oh. Yes. And I'll just be like, okay, I'm going to breathe. I'm like looking at all these techniques. I'll get in a Mindspace app and I'm like, all right, everything is fine. And then I'm like, oh my God, did I forget to turn off the oven?
I know, stupid stuff.
I'm like, oh, I haven't used the oven in 3 days. No, it's fine. I'm like, I haven't curled my hair. I'm like, the curling iron.
Stevie, I run through a list of every single thing that could go wrong at all times constantly.
I do too.
And men, I feel like for the most part, don't worry about it.
Oh, no. The other day, I woke up super early to take a flight, and I'm trying to be all quiet, and I open the door and Jesse had left his keys in the door. And so I'm like, hey, turn on the alarm, you know, do all this stuff. And then I open the door, I'm like, oh cool, keys are right here, you know, it's fine. And I'm like slamming the door, I'm like, you could have gotten us murdered. And he's like, what's happening? And I'm like, go back to
like
bed.
All night the keys were just in the door.
Oh, all night long.
Oh my yeah. Gosh, I know.
Meanwhile, I'm like, did you lock the door? Did you lock the bedroom door? Did you lock the door to get to the door, to the screen door? He's like, oh, my God.
So yeah. How are you combating this?
You know, I don't know that I am. I mean, I think it's just, honestly, it's the being busy. Sometimes I don't have time to be worried.
Mm-hmm.
That's
can we just
it.
Stop worrying? Like, can we just hand it over to God? That's what I'm trying to do. Like, I'm trying to do these Gabby girl. Bernstein mantras, start your day off right. Like, I am blessed. Yeah. I am abundant. I am healthy.
That's good.
I am calm. and just starting off with that. And then I'm just trying to stay in the moment. Like, yes. I have a big calendar now, so I write everything down that's due. Good. And I stay ahead of it. And then I'm like, okay, I don't need to run a loop in my head because it's on the calendar.
I know.
And, like, I'm going to write down what I need to do this day so then I don't have to run this loop.
Yes. That's why when I'm laying in bed and I'm like, oh, crap, I've got to do this. And then I'm like, okay, pull the Wunderlist app out, put it in the list.
And then shut and your brain off.
Go to bed. But I can do that with things that I have to do mm-hmm. more than I can do it with thoughts of like, why are we here? What is life? What is the meaning of existence?
I'm just Stevie, like, I love you.
I'm like, oh my gosh, why am I thinking this right now? And it's insane. I'm like, oh, my parents, they're growing older. And I'm like, I'm getting older. Oh my God, you can't stop aging. Oh my God, you can't stop death. And then I'm just like, okay, I love you, Gus. I love you, Jesse. Like, I'm just like, oh, sing a song in my head, go to bed.
Stevie.
It's crazy.
That is the best description I've ever heard of my own brain.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Because, like, as soon as I get the work stuff and the immediate needs checked off, it's like, let's go to the big, wide open world of the universe of everything that's happening and anything that could go wrong. Yes. But I don't want to think about the things that can go wrong. Well, that's what I don't want to do anymore, is like worry about that.
It's weird though. Sometimes it's not even stuff that goes wrong. And here's the thing too. Growing up, my parents, my grandparents, which I appreciate, and probably with my own children, I would do to a certain extent. But even my littlest sister and I talk about this all the time. Like, it was, you know, look both ways. Don't talk to strangers. Don't, you know, like, walk to your car prepared. And, you know, always look around you. Be aware of your surroundings. Look in the back seat. Lock all the doors. Which I appreciate, because it's gotten me through life and I'm safe and I'm healthy now and nothing bad happened to me. Yeah. And so I think about, like, my nephew and nieces and go, you know, okay. I mean, it was to the point of, like, don't park next to a car that looks like this. Like, it was intense.
So you're just like on guard. Yes. All the time.
So it was like running list of keep myself safe, keep
checklist constantly. Yes.
And I appreciate that it got me through life, you know, like watch your drink, don't ever, you know, it was just mm-hmm. constant.
From
you know,
your parents?
From my parents, from my grandparents, like walk to your car with your keys in your hand like this. It was everything. Here's some mace on a keychain. Here is, so I felt always on guard, but then always like, come at me, I dare you, you know what I mean? It was just like I felt completely scared and also like I could be a badass at any moment,
for sure.
So I was like, oh, I am ready, but also right. please don't hurt me.
Right. You know, right, like, yes.
So I can't help but go, okay, everyone's safe. And then I take it to the like nth degree. Oh, the universe, like, why are we here? What's gonna happen? Is one day our earth gonna just explode from the inside out?
Are we really gonna like all fry up like in global warming? Yes. Like, I think about that too. And oh. The fires in Australia, like, what's the world yes. ending? Like, oh my God, all the animals. And then I get sad and then I have to stop. Girl. Because then I'm like depressed for the whole world. I'm like, that is too heavy for one person.
Yes. We watched some, like, one strange rock, I think it was, with Will Smith
yes,
narrating
yes,
it.
Yes.
And it was just like about the planets, and it was astronauts who had like seen the Earth from uh-huh. outer space.
We
and
watched that.
I was just like, man, this is so fascinating. And then you're like, okay, where does God fit into this? And then you're like, where, what are we here for, a billion years? And then the other day I just asked Jesse out of the blue. I'm like, do you think like we've got maybe like 100 years left of the Earth? Or, and he's like, what? And I'm like, you know, like probably not going to be forever. Right. And he's like, I don't know. I'm like, you think it'll be our lifetime? Like, our kids, like, if we have kids, is that going to be their lifetime? Like, I just want to know, like, you know, have a good idea. Exploding? Yeah, like, should we have a kid? Because, like, what if they're in, like, a weird time? And he's just like, dude, you got to just, like, let it be. I'm like, yeah, I know. I'm like, yeah, I'm totally letting it be. But, like, also, what's going to happen? He's just like, oh, man, I can't turn it off.
I know. Stevie, yeah. I love your brain.
Yeah. But also another friend of mine, I was just like, do you think like this? And she's like, oh, 24/7. She goes, I wish I could just be like, ignorance is bliss.
Same.
Like, oh my gosh, this day is so great. And whatever happens today in this minute is awesome. And I'm like, oh, Me too. How do we do that? I'm like, oh, we're too smart for our own good. I'm like,
I wish, but
we're geniuses.
We're geniuses.
So
I'm like, I always feel like it's better. Like sometimes I'm like, it's better to know less.
I know.
Like, just know what you need to know and that's it.
Well, and so I've started to take some steps back away from like knowing too much about politics in the big scheme. I'm like, okay, let's bring it down. When we start to have some local things, I'll learn about these people.
Yes.
I'll get more involved this way. And then when it gets to like bigger elections and it's narrowed down some, it just is too much.
Yes.
Like I can't think about everything.
It's too much to think about on a deep, broad level.
Yes.
Because like your soul and your heart can only handle so much.
For sure.
So if you're thinking about every tiny detail that is possibly out there that you can gather about politics, mm-hmm. if you're thinking about every tiny detail that is possibly out there that you can gather about the universe, about like what's happening in the world,
yes,
like what's happening in our lifetime, what's happening in health, like all the different
everything
things that are help. Going on in the world, health,
people, like, good and bad, yes. like what about things, and you're just like,
if
okay.
you're handling yeah. all of this on the biggest level, it's too much.
It's so much.
We can't handle all that.
The other day I said, I kind of want to just like, sometimes I want to like think about how I would raise a kid to be just kind of an asshole who doesn't care, because sometimes I'm like holding the door for someone and they just like breeze by, or they'll let it slam in my face and I'm like, oh, you're welcome. And then I'm just like, what is my problem? I'm like, man, if I was an asshole, I just wouldn't even care. And
right.
then he's like, yeah, but you could never, you know, like, I just think about...
You think about people and every...
Yes, and
...angle
just,
from people yeah, at all the time.
And I'm like, I would rather get my feelings hurt being nicer to someone than go through life and not have the, like, connection being a jerk.
I get that. It's worth it for the yeah. connection.
Yeah, and I would want my kids to be, like, the kids... I just remember my... We had to say, like, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am.
Yes,
all that
kind
of stuff. And I remember just... having my mom's friends be like, Stevie is so sweet, or you know, I just love when she comes over. And I remember having friends that my mom would just be like, I cannot wait for this kid to go home, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, oh, I would want a kid like that too. I want this person that feels a little more empathetic than and gets their feelings hurt, but is a good human versus just a little
than living in your own
around.
Little tornado and
yeah.
not really caring about anybody else.
But it's a
even
struggle.
Though it might be more fun to be in your own tornado, because then you just do
oh.
you all the time.
Oh, for
if
sure.
If you could have a hybrid, if you could be in your own little world
yes.
and then still be considerate and care
yes.
about the people that you love, but for the most part, you're just operating in your own little universe.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the ticket. How
well,
do you do that?
I think too, sometimes like working in the business, there's a moment where you're kind of a sweet asshole.
Because you're a publisher.
Yes.
Your partner, are y'all partnered with Jay-Z?
We are. Our company is partnered with Roc Nation, which is Jay-Z's company.
Which is badass.
And
have you met Jay-Z?
I did.
And you got to tell your Beyonce story, because this
oh my
is my
God.
Favorite story. So for all y'all listening, Stevie is a badass publisher. You and your husband have a publishing company together.
Ooh.
And a publishing company is where you have songwriters that write for you.
Yes.
And they write songs and then you get them to artists to
yes.
put on their
I'm
albums.
I'm basically a babysitter of grown-up humans. I manage their writer calendars and pair them. It's like matchmaking with other songwriters. They come write a song, give it to me. I take it to the producers or the artist or the labels and say, please cut this song on your next record. And when I was younger, I would just like stare at the CD or the cassette, you know, inserts and be like, who wrote these songs? And
really?
Yeah, oh, I was obsessed.
You're obsessed with the makers of the song?
Yeah. And because at first you think like the singer wrote everything.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Then,
or you just think the songs appear somehow.
Totally. And then you're like reading all the lyrics and then you see in the parentheses the songwriter's names and you're like, huh, I don't see Faith Hill on this. Who is, you know, so-and-so?
Jesse Frazier.
Right. Yeah. Who's Stephanie Smith? Who is this person? And I'm just like, oh my gosh. Okay. And then you come to town and you start working. And I was in the tape room, which at the time,
where?
In a publishing company at EMI,
okay,
which now doesn't exist anymore. But it was a bit, it was a major, and I got hired to basically burn CDs for song pluggers, which is what I am now. So they would come to me and say, hey, put these five songs on a CD I'd burn it. They'd take it to a meeting, play it for a person, and they'd say, oh, yeah, we want to hold these songs and cut them on our next record. And
so is that how you started realizing that that was the job you wanted? Like, how did you narrow down what job you wanted in the
music industry? Yeah, I came here to sing. So
oh, wow.
I didn't even know what a music publisher was. I was like, I'm just going to go to Nashville. My mom's like, you have to have a fallback plan. And I was like, okay, well, a friend of mine said, you could go to school for music business. And I was like, what?
Judah Belmont?
No, I went to MTSU.
Okay.
And it was just because a high school friend of mine went to MTSU. That's the, he was just like, did you know you could go to school and like learn about record labels and stuff? I was like, what?
So you knew from a young age you wanted to be in the music industry.
Oh, yeah. Like when I would meet people or date someone back home in Georgia, I'd be like, just so you know, I'm going to Nashville. So like, can't get too serious.
Stevie, I feel like I was the same way. I swear to you. Like, I relate to your story so much. I never thought I was going to stay in Texas or Waco. I was always going to Nashville. Always.
I knew.
And it was Nashville for me. Always.
Yes, me too. It wasn't like, I have to find out where music is. It was like, I'm going to Nashville.
Yes.
To be a country singer.
How'd you find out about Nashville?
My mom sang when we were younger, and I would sing in bands and like harmonize for her. And she was, it's so crazy. She was in like contests a bunch. And then she won a trip to Nashville to sing at this place called the Nashville Sound, and like won a trip to like sing and whatever. But so I was like, oh, okay, well, that must be where music's made.
So you just knew, you locked in.
Yeah, like really early.
How old were you?
I don't even know. Like I just knew I was singing. Yeah, Also, my parents would be like, come out here and sing Elvira for everybody, or come out here and...
Would you sing on demand?
Oh, 100%.
You're fearless.
I was like, look at me, I'm singing.
Star.
Yeah, I'm like, love me, give me attention, give me applause.
Stevie, are you a 4 on the Enneagram?
No, I'm a 2.
I'm a 4.
With an 8 wing.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I know.
So 2 is a helper and an 8 is the...
Challenger.
Yeah. That's how you're like, I'll help you, I love you, but come at me.
Yes, I know. It's so weird. I'm like, hi, is there anything you need? Don't ask for too much. Or you better appreciate this.
Freaking love you.
Yeah, I was just like,
that's
always
a
doing
great
that.
Great combo.
Well, kind of. Then you're like super empathetic, and then you're like, why don't people appreciate everything I'm doing for them?
You know? Uh-huh. Oh, it's a headache, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
It's a blessing and a curse.
It's crazy.
Okay, so you're like, I'm coming to Nashville.
Yep. Went to the music business program at MTSU and then interned at Warner Brothers.
Interning was a game changer for me. Was it a game changer for
100%,
you?
100%. Because
in the music industry, it's a way in.
Yeah. And
at a young age.
I mean, honestly, we could do a lot of jobs without going to school.
Totally.
But there's no way you could come here and get a job without knowing
what the jobs are.
Yes.
And how to get into
them. Players are. And you don't do that without interning.
I totally agree. I feel like school to me was worth it for the internships. I went 100%. To Belmont and I interned at Capitol Records.
Yep.
I interned at publishing companies.
Yeah.
I interned for songwriters all over the place. And that is how I learned the music business. But you have to be in school.
You have to be in school to intern.
You do?
Yeah. Like for us, we cannot have an intern who isn't getting school credit.
Because you're not paying them.
Yep. And it's, and there's no pay. I mean, let's be real. Nobody here in Nashville is paying people to do anything they could get for free.
Oh yeah, of course not.
And for us too, our company is so small, even though we're attached to Rock Nation.
Jay-Z.
Everything is us like going, okay, we have to, whatever we pay anybody for anything, whether it's candles for the office or snacks for the writers, it's coming out of our red balance. So we have to make this money back and fill up this hole that they're lending us to run. So
if you can get someone for free, you're going to get someone for free.
Absolutely.
And a lot of those jobs that you need in your office aren't like, you don't have to have a full skill set yet.
No.
You can just be curious and hungry.
Yes.
And you can kind of teach them how to do it. It's just tedious stuff like burning a CD,
which takes
a long time.
Like typing up lyrics.
Yes.
And letting, you know, writers and artists in the building and not being a weirdo.
Mm.
I mean,
exactly.
That's basically
having
what it
cool
is.
Having a cool personality actually
yes.
goes a long way.
It goes so much further than...
Not necessarily cool, but just like a good personality.
Yes.
One that vibes with people.
A good hang.
Yes,
like
good
even
hang.
In our writers, you know, like we're so lucky that Rock Nation has been so nice to us to be like, hey, we trust you. We see that you have an eye and an ear for talent, and Jesse's just killing it. So it's kind of like, let us know if you need us.
So y'all get to run it however you want. And they just support you and back you. And they're like, you fly, little bird.
Yes.
Anytime I'm your big daddy over here. If you need me to drop the hammer. Totally. But you got this.
We'll say, hey, we really love this writer. Here's the music. And before they even listen, and they always listen, but before they even listen, they're like, do you like it? Are you passionate about this? Is this something you just do it?
Are you going to work it? Do you believe in it? Because basically, they're not in Nashville. That's not their honey hole. Like, they're obviously killing the rock, the hip hop world and the pop world. So it's like, okay, they're hiring who they think is killing it in the country world.
Totally.
Which is your husband, Jesse Frazier, who's writing every number one song in the world. And you, as the publisher running it, God, y'all are like a total power couple.
It is. And it's so funny, though.
How many number ones has Jesse gotten?
He has 13.
13.
In country, and he had he had the Kane Brown Marshmallow song.
I freaking love that song. What's it called?
One Thing Right.
I got one thing right.
Yes.
Oh, my God. That is such an honest song.
Oh, my gosh.
When I heard that song for the first time, Kane singing it, I was like, dang, he is, like, really being vulnerable.
I know. And I loved that for him.
I loved that for him. Yeah. I feel like marriage and fatherhood is, like, changing him in a great way.
100%. God. And it's so fun, too, because those kind of songs, like, for our family, for my nephew who's 11, he's like obsessed with Marshmallow. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh my gosh, Uncle Jesse did this.
You're the coolest
aunt. We're like sending Marshmallow gear to him. And he's like, this is amazing.
Oh my God, you like win.
It's so cute. Like the first time Jesse had written Southside with Chris Stapleton.
Or Carrie Underwood?
That's Southbound.
Oh.
But Southside was a TR song.
Tom's Rhett.
Yep, song. And it was in the Chipmunk movie.
Oh my gosh.
And it was like Jesse had done all these things, but all of a sudden he's cool because he had a song in a Chipmunk movie.
Isn't it so funny?
It's crazy.
Like perspective is that's reality. The thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kids, I mean, truly.
Yeah. And now it's like Marshmallow, so it's like cool again.
What are some of Jesse's biggest songs?
Let's see. He wrote Dirt on My Boots for John Party, which was a 3-week number one.
My favorite part is, but I can only get so fancy.
Oh, I know. I love it. I love it.
I love that.
He wrote that one with Rhett Akins and Ashley Gourley. And I remember them turning in the demo. And Rhett was singing it. And it had such a No Diggity vibe. Mm-hmm. Like, it was so kind of hip hop with just these country lyrics. And I was like, oh my God, I'm obsessed with this song. And John just took it to a whole other level.
John Party crushed it. It was like made for John Party.
It was so good. And I just, I love that.
And Rhett Akins, I always get it wrong. It's Akins.
Yes.
Not Atkins.
Akins.
Rhett Akins is Thomas Rhett's dad. Yes. Which is really cool because they write together and Thomas took him on tour with him, which is so fun.
It's so crazy.
The whole TR, Thomas Rhett camp. It's fun. Like there's a crew of y'all. Y'all are like a camp. Y'all are a posse.
Yes. It is. What's so weird is that I first worked with Rhett at EMI.
So y'all have been in business a long time.
Yeah. I knew him and I remember going
out. Does he write for y'all now?
No. Oh, okay. He writes for Chapel.
Okay.
But I remember going out to lunch. We were like at Jay Alexander's sitting there and he's like, yeah, my son wants to get into music and I don't know. I don't know if I want to, you know, whatever. And I was like, well, it's probably going to happen. I mean, if he wants to, it's going to happen because everybody's going to look at you. At the time, Rhett had just
that
come out of his
my
record
truck
deal.
In yeah. Her drive.
And was writing my all song. Those big hits, like, you know, all the big new country stuff was coming in. It was like he was just catching fire again.
As a songwriter now, not an artist.
Yeah. And so he's just like, I don't know if I want. And I think TR was like 14.
It was happening.
And
yeah.
I'm just like, whoa.
So you were in on it from the beginning.
But what's weird is that then we lost touch for such a long time because I left EMI, went to Olay Publishing. I've been in publishing for about 15 years. And I left, went to Olay. Then I started working with Pat Higdon. Once he left a major and restarted up his independent. And
what was that called?
It was called Patrick Joseph Music. Okay. And we had a lot of fun. And it was the first time that I had a person in the music business who was like such a mentor to me. And I just kind of was like figuring it out on my own. Like when I was in the tape room, it was kind of like, here's your job, burn CDs, don't make any waves. Just put your head down, do whatever it takes. And then it'd be like, well, EMI was huge.
Wait, were you telling yourself that? Or
yeah.
That was your
philosophy?
Yeah,
it was the vibe. It was like, okay, was like the song business. Pluggers do this, you burn CDs. And then it's like, okay, well, I want to do what they do. So I'm going to...
What did you like about what they did?
I loved, once I got, I didn't even know what publishing was. It was, I had interned at record labels, and then a friend of mine was like, hey, this publisher friend of mine, they need to hire someone. I was getting out of college. It was like, take the job, whatever the job is, and then
just get a job.
I'll figure out what I want to do later.
Totally.
And so
just wanna get in.
Yeah. Like get in and whatever it is, as long as I'm on some kind of creative side, then I'll figure it out.
I feel like that's really good advice for anyone who wants to be in the music business. Like get in.
Yes.
And learn the players.
Take the trash out. Bust your ass. Ask what else you can do.
Ask if you can, like, if you got a cool vibe and a good hang.
Yes.
Try to go to events.
Yeah.
You know, try to go to like number one parties and like go to events if you can and network.
Yes. I was making like 18 grand a year and I'm like, okay, I have 10 bucks extra this week. If I go to this showcase and I'm watching, you know, a writer or artist try to get a deal, but I see the head of a label or I see someone in the A&R department who is going to be a good contact for me, I'm going to use that 10 bucks to buy them a Bud Light.
Smart.
And then
that's a very like cool move.
Well, because it's like I'm not getting any kind of like expense account and I'm broke as hell, but this is, if they like me, then they'll let me pitch them a song one day. Where when I get to that level, they're going to go, oh, yeah, she's cool. Yeah, sure. Come on in. You know, and it did that for me.
Did that like, pay off for you? And you can use your internship as your, like, card. Be totally. Like, hey, I'm in college. I'm already interning for so-and-so. This, like, you know, you can just be bold.
Absolutely. And once I started at EMI, it was just kind of like, hey, you know, Tom Luteran, can I go to a meeting with you? Or
so you just asked.
Oh, yeah.
Or don't I would be scared to ask.
EMI was huge and had so many songs and songwriters that, you know, once these songs come in and they're brand new and they're hot, all the pluggers are taking them out. They want everyone to hear them as quick as they can because new songs are being written every day and coming in new. So I would be like, hey, is it okay if I pitch these old songs, this back catalog? And they're just like, oh, okay, that's cute.
You're
sure.
Cute.
Yeah, do whatever. And then I'm like, all right, if I can buy Brian Wright a beer at Universal and he's listening
Universal
for, you know, at the time, anyone like Julie Roberts or whatever. And I'm going, okay, maybe then he'll listen to a song from me for Luke Bryan one day. And like, it's
if
just
you bring
like
him a good song.
Wheels turning all the time.
Ugh, people, this is great. If you want to make it happen, like you took your opportunity and then you explored every different door that you can walk through from that opportunity.
100%.
Instead of just going in and showing up and making your basic job, you're like, okay, here's an angle where I can like work harder, do something that, say you get a cut on the back catalog. And now Tom Luteran, the head of Sony Publishing, is like, well, shoot, he benefits.
Yeah.
Because
they're not needing any other song pluggers.
But if you're going to do it for free.
Right. But if I'm going to get some activity, I left the tape room pretty quickly because the creative assistant in the office, it's like I went from a little room burning CDs to the hallway where the desk was to be the assistant, you know, keeping track of all the holds and all the cuts and, you know, the tip sheet of who's looking
and
for
holds
songs.
Mean that an artist has heard a song or someone who represents the artist has heard the song and they like it enough to put it into the big mix of songs they're considering to record for the album.
And it kind of lets you know, like, okay, I pitched this song, they like it enough to say, hold that for me, I'm not going to pitch it to anyone else until they give me an idea of the artist likes it, let's take it the next step, we're going to take it into the studio, maybe we cut it in the, you know, and record it. And then, you know, that becomes what's on the album. Or, you know, or it goes off hold and I keep track of that and go, okay, we can pitch it to the next person. And so I'm just like going, okay, meanwhile, I'm sitting in the hallway and Buddy Cannon is listening for Kenny Chesney.
Big producer.
And I'm going to take this song and I'm sitting there and the writers really got, I love songwriters, and the writers really got to know me. So I was sitting in the hallway one day and I remember Dave Turnbull brought a song in and he's like, where is everybody? And I'm like, I don't know. I guess they're at a meeting. I don't know really what's happening. And he's like, oh man, I just got a new one and it's so good. And I'm like, okay. And so I listened. He's like, oh, you know, let me play it for you. And I was like, yes. Like,
you're like, yes,
this
on
is
the
awesome.
First one.
Yeah,
I'm
like
the first big one. Hit songwriters.
Yes.
First
this is my
song.
Chance.
This is my moment.
And so he played it for me and I'm like, dude, this is so good. I called Buddy Cannon's assistant, Shannon, at the time. And I was just like, hey, I have one song. Do you think Buddy would let me play it for him? And
so you just took action.
Yes.
You didn't even wait for Tom or the head to get
waiting.
Back and hear the song. You're like,
well,
I am
sitting
get
there
this
going
cut.
Like,
This is a hit.
If I can do this.
You saw a moment.
If I get holds, if I get cuts, I'm going to be a song plugger.
You saw your moment.
Yeah,
you
I'm like, this is going to happen.
Stevie, you jumped.
Oh, I did.
You didn't even
and
care.
And I'm like, I'm probably going to get in trouble, but you I'm said, doing
pray
it.
Pray for forgiveness later. Yeah. And that's so, the way.
Buddy, who
I'm
is
like, in love with you.
Very hard on songs. He is very hard. Like, and it's just like, you don't bring him a lot of stuff, you know.
Don't overwhelm him. Bring him something
no
good.
No way. If you've got a top five, you narrow it down to three. And then you take it to Buddy. And he listens. And he says, no, I'm going to pass on that. Thank you. Bye. And he said, oh, and I said, one song. I just have one song. He said, all right, come on right now.
So you and went so over there I left, person.
And I went in person, played him the song.
You probably weren't supposed to leave, were you?
No. I wasn't supposed to do nothing. I was like, I'm going.
You're and like, Dave's, I'm going to do this.
Of course, Dave is just like.
Are you your adrenaline
songwriters
flowing?
Are just like anyone who is obsessed with a song. They love you right then.
Because
like,
they
oh
want
my
you.
Because
you are their resource to getting their songs yes. and albums. So they're like, okay, do this. Yeah. Go, girl.
And the more people, the better, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, yes. You could have four song pluggers. They could all love your song. Or they could be one person be like, this is my favorite song of all time. And the other person go, that's okay.
You want the person on fire.
Yes.
The songwriter wants the person absolutely. On fire. So you're the one on fire.
Yep. I ran to Buddy. He said, oh my God, I love this. I'm going to play it for Kenny. He said, put this on hold. And I'm like, I mean, it was
so that was like, did you like cry in your car?
The angels, the clouds parted, the sun broke down on me, and the angels were like, oh, you did it. And so,
see, you were so bold. You took so many risks.
I was like, terrified.
But you were carving your path. You said, I'm going to get this.
Yes. So I sent out an email, and I'm like, you know, the hold email, which is
how
the holy grail.
How good did you feel to do this?
I felt good, but also scared, like,
you might get in trouble.
Yeah. And so,
but you already got it to the head guy.
I know,
you got it to the
know,
producer and Kenny. It's like, what more can they have done?
I
know,
only had permission to pitch old songs.
But you crossed the line a little
bit. And here's
bit.
A song no one's heard.
And you took it and ran.
Yeah, and I'm like,
Stevie,
doing you're this.
A rebel.
Yeah, and so I was just like,
how old are you at this point?
Probably 24.
Oh my God, I'm so obsessed with you. So yeah. You said, okay, I'm just going to deal with the consequences.
Yep.
So you sent out to the whole staff, all the heads,
the hold
everyone,
email.
That I'm you like, got the hold and waited.
Hold the song title, the writers. Hold for Kenny Chesney per Buddy Cannon.
And from
it's like,
me.
Yeah, it's not like even like someone heard it to play for Buddy Cannon.
Like you got
it's
it like, to the top dog.
And then I'm getting like, how did you get this on hold? What song is this? And I'm just like.
No one even knew the song.
I'm like, please don't fire me. But then they're like, hell yes. Kenny Chesney's going to hear a song. You know, Buddy, like to
Buddy
get
loves
on
it.
Hold by Buddy, you could play 100 songs and he might like one. And I played one and he liked the one. And so Kenny ended up cutting it. It didn't make the record.
But you got a cut on your first pitch?
Yes.
You little stinker.
I know, by Kenny Chesney. It didn't make the record, but
to get a song cut by Kenny Chesney
that
is
got
huge.
Me huge. A song plug. I became a song plugger.
Because after that, they're like, okay, you're already in the
yeah.
system.
The
Everyone
writers love
knows
you.
The
yeah.
Like if they're going to, if they need a new song plugger,
right.
of course they're going to hire you. So yep. that's why internships and being bold pay off.
Yes.
So you got hired right
I
after
I got hired right
Steve,
after that.
You were such a yep. little rebel.
It's like, okay, well, my spot was open in the tape room and they're like, fill that. And then the next person coming out of the tape room was going to fill the creative assistant position, which is where I was. And then I got my own office and I got a raise and I got a promotion and I got a tiny expense account. I'm like, yes, I'm not buying beers out of my own pocket. But that, I mean, that was what did it.
But you were so driven and focused and you figured out how to make the extra steps.
Yeah.
So many people wait for someone else to do it for them. I feel
yes.
like that is the fatal flaw of people.
Yep.
Like you can be the most talented person, but if you are waiting for someone to make it happen for you,
totally,
you're screwed.
Yeah.
You've
well
got,
because somebody else is going to do it around you.
And like you had the talent and the drive and the ability to do it, but then you also had the extra hustle.
Yeah.
And the extra vision to like be creative and getting in.
Yeah.
And I feel like some people don't have that.
I'm like, okay, I'd rather get in trouble and have them be like, don't, you know, that's stay in your lane. Don't do that again, whatever. But you kind of, if you know that you've got a good shot,
you got to go.
Really, and they really can't say, hey, don't ever get us Kenny Chesney holds again. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like, okay, that just showed that Buddy would allow me to come play him a song. Like whether I got the hold or not wasn't the thing. The thing was is that I had made the connection and I had networked enough that Buddy would let me
go directly to him.
And it just like gave me street cred.
Because they're like, shoot, Stevie can go straight to Buddy.
Yeah.
Because it's a big deal. There's like five major producers. No, there's more now. But there, back then, there was like only like a handful of major producers.
For sure.
So if you have a direct line to one of those major producers already, then you're ahead of the game.
And I was already like making friends in the A&R world because I was going out to every show I could get to. It was exhausting, but it
going
was
out
so
is a
exciting.
Big name of the game. And A&R people, for everyone listening, they're like the creative director. They're like, what is it, artists in a repertoire? They listen for songs
they're
for
like the
artists.
Label scout. Like for they songs. Find the artist they wanna sign at the label, and then they find their music. You know, if the artist isn't necessarily a writer, or even if they are, they know the players in town who are writing the hits, and they're going, you guys need to get with my new artist. Or they're like, play me the songs that you have that would be like a, you know, George Strait type thing or whatever. So I was just kind of going, okay, I'm going to be cool to everybody. I'm going to buy beers when I can. And then one day I'm going to get into this spot.
And you did it.
I did. And then it was just.
So now you have your own little expense account. You got your own little office. Now you're a song plugger. Now what?
Now I'm just, well, and then I'm newbie. You know, it's like you go.
Are you at Sony?
I was at EMI.
Oh, yeah, EMI. Sorry.
And then in that, you know, hierarchy of tape room, assistant, now plugger. But it's like each place is brand new because even though I know everybody in the building, it's like I've started another job where, okay, now you get the writers that, you know, are maybe needing more attention, or now you're getting the people that, you know, everybody's worked with, but it just didn't click. And so I was like in the land of misfit toys. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And then it was like, hey, I'm good. If I felt like, okay, they're all going, oh damn it, I'm getting the new kid, like, ugh. And I'm going, I love everything you do. Bring me all your songs. Let's go out. Let's do this.
And you want to prove yourself.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, well, this isn't so bad. I'm getting lots of attention. And
because
so,
some of the more, I guess, veteran song pluggers, like, it's not, they're not as, and I'm not saying they're not as hungry, but like.
They just have a lot more on their plate.
Yes. And you're trying to
For me, I'm like, oh, I don't have anything to do yet. So.
Let me get something to do. And it's going to be you, your career, your songs.
And that's where I was really becoming close with Morgan Hayes at the time, who's now Morgan Stapleton, married to Chris.
Stapleton.
And Chris was at Seagale, which was our parent company. And Jesse was just kind of...
Is this how you met Jesse?
We knew each other. It's so crazy. I was married before, and I was working at the Melting Pot while I was going to
how
NTSU.
How old were you when you got married?
21.
Oh, baby.
Baby. Yes, baby. And I worked at the Melting Pot and interned at Warner Brothers with Jesse's girlfriend. And so we all knew each other. And then the music business is like...
Small. Yeah.
And so we just kind of knew each other. And after my divorce,
I had... How long were you married?
5 years, 6 years.
Okay.
A long time for a kid.
For totally.
You know?
Yeah.
But I think, too, I was so ambitious.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like... Probably if I was a little bit older when I was doing that, I'm like, okay, I need to figure out a balance of my work.
You weren't ready for balance?
No. I'm like, I will do and go to any show no matter what time of day. If I have to be out all night long, get up early in the morning, which you don't really in the music business, but like I will, whatever they say.
You
so if
it.
My home life suffers, so be it. I'll get to that later.
Is that kind of what happened?
Yeah. Yeah.
You just couldn't prioritize
marriage.
Yeah,
he's a good guy. I'm a good girl. It was just whatever.
Yeah, too young.
And now he's remarried and Jesse and I are together. And Jesse was just kind of starting to write. And so Chris was having a lot of success as a writer.
You're talking about Chris Stapleton?
Mm-hmm. And me and Morgan were hanging out all the time. And it would be like Jesse was doing remixes at home or, you know, kind of coming up with
Jesse
tracks.
Didn't start off as a producer.
No, he
or
was in
a writer.
Publishing.
He got me my first internship.
I know,
Victoria
when you said
Shaw.
That, I was like, what? I didn't know that.
I've known Jesse for, he's like one of the first people I knew in this
so
town.
So crazy.
Which I love Small World. I think
I
it's
too.
So fun.
Yeah, and it all comes back full circle. You're like, what? No way.
I know.
That's why I'm like, everybody needs to be nice to everybody.
Do not burn one bridge.
Exactly.
That's another key for
longevity.
You are
not longevity. Too big for your britches because...
And you could be knocked down tomorrow and on top of the world in a year.
Absolutely.
And we've seen it happen and we've lived it all.
Yep. And don't think that someone coming in, you know, a new just graduated person is beneath you or whatever.
They could be running the head of the company.
Yes. Things happen fast and things happen slow. And so it's just kind of like... You know, you could be on fire one day and writing all the hits, and the next day you can't get a co-write to save your life. Mm-hmm. Or your songs just aren't listened to the same. And it doesn't matter if you're good or bad. So it's just kind of like...
Everyone says it's like if you're on your streak.
Yes.
Like if you get your streak, you cannot be touched. You are like on fire, but then the streak ends, and then someone else gets a streak.
Absolutely.
You can get another streak and come back around, but like...
Yeah.
It is like lightning fast.
Yeah, and if you're a hit writer... And you know, everybody gets their own crew and you like that. You find the people that you write your most amazing songs with, but also the people that you have the most fun with, mm-hmm. which I think matters more than a good song. Mm. If you're having a good time in the room, something happens with that song versus, oh, here are three badass writers. It should make magic putting them together. And then they're like, you get it back and you're like, oh, that's good.
It's all about chemistry. Thought
something else was going to happen, but this is cool. And then you could have the people who are just like buds hanging out, you know, shooting the shit in the room and being like, yes, this is the song that is supposed to happen today.
Because they get to truth place faster.
Yes.
Because probably they're all really, they enjoy life and they're just writing real.
But it's important that they always leave room for the new guy or girl to come in and go, okay, yes, I have my crew, but I'll try anything once. Or if it's my job to go, hey, I know you don't know this person and you might be at a different level than they are, but I think this is going to be a good match.
Yeah.
And they just have to go.
And that's where they trust you.
Okay, let's see. And yeah, I mean.
You got to try it once. Yeah. I mean, it might not work, but it's worth a try.
Absolutely. And you have to find your days to do that. I mean, I can't throw in brand new ideas every day because we still got to get commercial songs and we've still got to get hits happening. And if I know this person with Jesse makes this kind of magic, we're keeping that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But there's always room to try something new and let this new person in that, you know, maybe I've heard that they don't know anything about and you're going, yeah.
So that's where you have to stay up to who's the new writers, what's happening,
yes.
like what's going on outside of
totally.
Your little world that you built.
Yeah. And so Jesse was making tracks at home, just, you know, basically like karaoke music from scratch on the computer. And it was like, okay, you and Chris should like hang out and do this because I think it would be so cool. Chris obviously has this amazing voice,
but it took him forever to hit on the big
you
level.
Know, and it's so crazy. He had a few record deals before mm-hmm. he had the Chris Stapleton thing. And so it was just like, why don't y'all just hang out? And it was so funny because Chris is just this country songwriter. Jesse loves like EDM and pop and Motown coming from Detroit. And so it was just like, y'all get together. And Jesse had this whole idea of what he thought he was going to do with Chris Stapleton. And Chris is like, are we going to make like rap songs? What's happening? And so the first song they ever did was hysterical. It had like crazy little dinosaur sounds in the background.
They just had fun.
Oh, yeah. And they were both kind of going, is this what we're supposed to do? Is this right? And they get this song and I'm like, what is this? And he's like, I don't know. I think I would
dinosaurs.
Like to convince him to like write with me one more time. He said, I would really love to make like an Adele Chris Stapleton song.
Okay.
And I'm like, yeah, that'd be so good. And so they wrote Crash and Burn.
And second try.
Yeah. And it was just like
a huge hit for Thomas Rhett.
Oh my gosh. It changed everything. They wrote another song called Lonely Girl, which Charles Kelly ended up cutting on his solo record.
I remember that.
That song was so incredible. Justin Timberlake ended up hearing that song somehow and was like, wow, this is so cool. We all thought, oh my God, maybe we'll get a Justin
Timberlake.
So that's
how Justin Timberlake heard about Chris Stapleton's
voice.
Yeah,
they started like getting to know each other from that kind of thing. And then just those things like, random little songs, nighttime hangs in the studio, and you know, Chris and Jesse, I mean, it just kind of
they just clicked after that.
They yeah It really did. And it took Jesse from, I'm making some little pop tracks and, you know, my songwriters, I'm a publisher, so I can't say this.
Was doing this while he was a publisher.
Yeah. And so it was like, he couldn't just go in and be like, supposed to be getting hey guys, writers. I'm a songwriter. And they're like, no, you work for songwriters.
You're supposed to be getting us the cut.
Yeah. But what was so cool about his writers was that they kind of had this thing. They were all their own little, like Carrie Barlow, who now writes for us, had
love
come from
small
the
world.
Rock world and had also gotten Christian cuts and hits with Toby Mac. And so Carrie'd be like, man, some of these tracks I feel like Toby would like. And so while they would hang out, and Jesse was kind of doing demos for the guys at the office, it was that thing where track guys were just getting started in Nashville. Mm-hmm. It was kind of weird because a songwriters would get together, write a song, record it on a tape or on their voice memo or whatever, take it to the publishers. They would say, yeah, let's go make a demo session, hire song, you know, guitar players, drummers, whatever, cut these songs in a studio to pitch. These are the demos. And Jesse was the first person going, I think I could take your song that you have the voice memo and just kind of put a loop to it and, you know, program some beats behind it and you could play guitar. And it was,
he was on the cutting edge of tracks.
He really was. I mean, and it was a game changer because it costs money to go in the studio and do that. And
to do a full demo with like players, session players. Yeah, you're talking every about instrument. You got to pay them by the hour.
$500 to $800 a song.
And now you can just do it with one person on their yes. computer.
And Jesse was just kind of doing it as a favor and going, oh, I can also, you're writing all these songs and then you pick out of 10 songs what five you want to go in the studio and make demos of. Well, now you could just make a demo out of all of them.
You don't have to pick. You can have all of them.
And you don't have to wait and you don't have to go, well, we don't have the money to cut all 10 of these in the studio, but we could do five. So what five do I think are the best? What five do you think are the best? And maybe that lines up and maybe a song gets left behind
that
because it's just
a
work
great
tape.
Song.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. So it kind of went into, like, Jesse ended up cutting the, or like creating a loop and all that for American Honey that
wow.
Carrie wrote with Shane Stevens and Hillary Lindsey that later became Lady Antebellum's number one. So wow. It was just kind of like, okay, I see the value in this. And while he's doing that, they're like, well, what else do you have? The writers were doing that. And Carrie's going, what do you have just like tracks? What's going on? And be like, oh, I'm going to take this to Toby Mac. And then they end up writing a day after work and Jesse gets a Christian cut on Toby Mac and then it becomes a number one. And then he's got these pop tracks and Shane Stevens going, hey, can I have that? And I'll top line to it and I'll write the lyrics and come back and you can record me. And they're getting like cuts in Germany. And so
it all started happening fast for
Jesse? It did. It was really weird. It went from, you know, please let me program to your work tape and make a demo for you to save us some money in the publishing side of things, they're getting cuts.
So, wow, this is actually an asset.
Yeah.
Like, this is like a game changer.
Yeah. And he got like a cut on Hot Shell Ray. And then it was just kind of like, he also DJed. And at the time.
And he DJs for Thomas Rhett now on tour.
Yeah. And what's crazy is that Carolyn Mobley, who I used to pitch songs to at RCA.
She's A&R there.
And then she went to Warner Brothers. And when she was leaving Sony to go Sony RCA to go to Warner Brothers, she said, hey, doesn't Jesse DJ? And I was like, yeah, he DJs, you know, parties, whatever. She said, I would love to have him DJ a party for me that I'm like going to Warner Brothers and it's my new thing. So he did that. She loved him and said, hey, I have a friend who's looking for a DJ for their party planner that's coming to town. And it was Colin Cowie, who is a huge lifestyle party planner for like Oprah and like he had a little like I remember seeing him in Style magazine in the back. It would be
he
like
he became a DJ for these big parties.
Yes. And so
what parties?
He DJed Kim Zosiak Bierman's wedding. He DJed Cash Money Records, which is like
she's Don't Be Tardy to the party, right?
Yes. And he DJed Alyssa Milano's wedding.
Oh, wow.
And then yeah, he was just getting, because Jesse's a perfect mix of right left brain. He has the business mind to go, oh, I'm going to show up on time and I'm going to do this job and whatever. But then he's so creative that he's a great whatever he wants to do.
So
I mean,
he's just a little gold mine.
Yeah. So at the time, he's like DJing on the side. And Seth England, who was at the time Florida Georgia Line's manager, said, hey, we really want to bring a DJ out on the road to DJ in between the sets of the opener and then FGL and whatever. Would you do it for us? And he was just like, I mean, he's a publisher. He's working a full-time job. But it's like, I will do this if you help me get a right with the guys. Like, if I'm out on the road and I bring...
You guys both are so good at, like, working it. Like,
being, you've got to.
Yes.
Like, it's just not going to happen.
Don't just take what they give you. Yes. So yes, and...
Yep. And so he's like, if you can make this happen for me, I'll DJ. I'll, you know, it's like, if I could get one right.
Yeah.
Just one.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'll see what I can do. Let's try it out. So he goes out on the road. He's on a bus and he takes Carrie Barlow and then Sarah Buxton and
another great songwriter.
Amazing.
The best.
And they're like, the bus had broken down. I mean, it was a hot mess. And he fell off the stage, like trying to help move his DJ equipment. I mean, it was a
Jesse, this is his first time?
Oh yeah.
First
comedy
night?
Of air. No, luckily it wasn't his first night. I think he probably would have died. But he was already into the, like, had hung out with the guys. Everybody loved him. And then, you
good
know.
Good vibes.
Just, but the day that they were going to, like, bringing the songwriters out was going to be the time to write.
Uh-huh.
And so he's just like, when you go out on the bus with people, artists are very busy. They've mm-hmm. got radio things to do. They've got meet and greets to happen. And so they don't always have time to write.
Mm-hmm.
But you're just going and hoping that you see them at catering at breakfast and you're like, hey guys, I've got the rig set up in the, you know, the little mobile studio of, on the bus. If you want, like, no
you
pressure.
Cool. I know.
Yeah. Cause you have to be cool, but you're
on
inside,
the inside. You're like, please write, please
burning
write, please
up.
Write, please
like,
write.
Oh my God.
Do artists
my
know
chance?
That everyone's
chance.
Dying about on the inside?
I think, you know, at first they don't. And they're just like, oh, cool. We're cool. Yeah. Well, if we want to write, we'll get to
I don't
it.
Know your whole life is hinging
I
on this today.
I think now they feel, cause they are doing a lot more bus riding. They feel the pressure of, wow, we brought these people out.
We need to write.
And now they take writers out just specifically to write.
Right.
Jesse was the DJ.
Back in the day.
And
yeah,
he was not a known writer.
Right.
And so FGL had pretty much finished the record. But they get to the venue, wherever it was, and he set up the rig. And he had somehow heard that Tyler and Brian were like wanting a reggae vibe or something. And Carrie had done a song for Toby called Made to Love. It's very reggae influenced. And so he's like, well, let's just me, you and Sarah, like, come up with some vibes and whatever, and like bump it out of the bus speakers. And you know, and the guys ended up coming up onto the bus,
so they just turned it up loud so they could hear.
Yeah. And they're like,
I love that.
I think,
like,
it was just the pressure, like, oh yeah. God, we got these writers and I don't want to do this, but I feel bad. And thank God they came on and wrote Sundays.
Are you serious?
Mm-hmm. And then wrote the song called Good. And the record was mostly finished, and they cut them last minute.
And Sundays was a single and a hit.
First number one. Yep.
Wow. But, okay, I just got to reiterate, you and Jesse both do this. Like, you just don't take no for an answer. Like,
yeah.
You're just like, okay, I have this opportunity.
You have
How
to.
Can I exploit every angle of this opportunity
totally.
So it happens for me?
Yeah.
And not be annoying. It's not being annoying. And
yeah,
it's
that's
not,
the balance.
You have to walk that line.
Yes. Because inside, you're going, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. Mm-hmm. And then on the outside, you're like, hey, guys, what's up? I'm cool. Everything's breezy. Woo-woo. And then you're just like, please. You know, or every day I'm pitching songs, and if someone says to me, that's a pass, well, that's one person's opinion. So it's like, okay, that was the A&R person, but the artist hasn't heard it. That was the label, but the producer hasn't heard
it. You're like,
it.
I'm not going to give
so,
up
like,
just on
else?
One person's opinion.
Yes, because American Honey was passed on a couple times, and, you know, it just happened to get to Paul Worley, who was producing Lady A at the time, that got to the band, and they're like, we love this. I mean, that's just,
you cannot give up.
No,
you cannot give up. I wasn't Strawberry Wine passed on by